Gliding through the maze of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is never easy on an average day. In order to understand the trends and pulse of the Palestinian people during the Israel-Hamas war, one man is noted for some of these answers. Did the Palestinian people support Hamas on October 7th? Would they today?
Dr. Khalil Shakaki
is a pollster and founder of the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research. Also joining us is Georgia Valente, who is the Middle East correspondent for the Media Line. Thank you both for being here.
Happy to be with you.
Dr. Shakaki, 10 months into an ongoing war between Israel and Hamas, are the Palestinian people still supporting Hamas?
A certain percentage of Palestinians support Hamas, but it's not the majority. It has never been the majority. There was never a time since the creation of Hamas that a majority of Palestinians supported Hamas. It has always been a minority in Gaza and a minority in the West Bank. The question is the size of this minority, how small or how big a minority it is. The support after October the 7th in Gaza has essentially remained stable. It has not changed, and it reflected the support from those who share Hamas's values. This is about 40% of Gazans. And that's the percentage that has essentially remained intact during the last decade or so. There might have been a sudden increase here and there during wars, but overall, that percentage has never crossed the 50% threshold. In the West Bank, the support is much smaller, because those who share Hamas's values are much smaller in size. We're talking about 20% or so of West Bankers who support Hamas because they share Hamas's values. But since October the 7th, that percentage has increased considerably. It is about 40% or so today. So that essentially means Hamas has doubled the size of the support it used to have before the war. Not because people more people are now sharing Hamas's values, but because there are more people now who share Hamas's policies. Most importantly, the perception that Hamas was right to carry out the attack on October the 7th because of the suffering of the Palestinians living in Gaza under the siege and blockade of the by Israel over the Gaza Strip, and because they think that attack has generated a great deal of change at the international level, making the Palestinian-Israeli issue central and the search for a solution to the conflict more urgent, and that this is an achievement of October the 7th that has therefore led to that increase in the support for Hamas in the West Bank.
When you look at what happened on October 7th and 1,200 people murdered and so many hundreds of hostages taken, is there any empathy on the Palestinian side that you're seeing?
No, we don't see empathy on the Palestinian side. Most Palestinians look at what they see today on their TV. If they turn on Al Jazeera, what they see are women and children being killed every day by the dozens. And that keeps them away from any kind of empathy with the Israelis who suffered on October the 7th. In addition to that, Israeli perception of what happened on October the 7th is fundamentally different from the way that the Palestinians perceive what happened. It's a matter of knowing or not knowing what happened on that day. For most Israelis, the atrocities were committed, but the overwhelming majority of the Palestinians does not believe that atrocities against women and children took place on that day. Most Palestinians do believe that Hamas acted sometimes in a manner that was contradictory to international law. For example, taking women and children and elderly hostages in Gaza, the majority of Palestinians believe that this is unacceptable, that this is a violation of international law. But when they look at what Israel is doing, that seems to basically overcome any hesitation that they might have in viewing what happened on October the 7th as a correct decision by Hamas.
Many of the West in the West and many of Israelis have opined that Hamas withholds all kinds of food and humanitarian aid. And how do a lot of the people living there feel? Are they afraid to say that this is true? Do they feel that others are exaggerating it, even though you've had even UN offices say that this is the case? Now, what is the pulse on the ground in this particular area?
As far as we can tell, there is tremendous criticism in Gaza against the manner in which aid is being distributed. But the extent to which this is blamed on Hamas is debatable. We do not see a majority of Palestinians in Gaza blaming Hamas for the failed process of delivery and distribution of aid. Most Palestinians believe it is the Israeli measures, policies that it implements on the ground that creates such conditions for gangs and armed groups to act on their own, sometimes justifiably because they are hungry, and that they feel that unless they take matters into their own hands, they will continue to be hungry. And so many people believe that the conditions that were created that led to current anarchy in Gaza, and that Israel, by targeting Hamas police in Gaza, has essentially prevented any kind of law enforcement or imposition of law and order, and that led to the miserable situation with regard to aid distribution, and that it is not Hamas deliberately stealing food or aid, or that Hamas is acting in a manner that denies people access to such aid, but that it is rather a matter of a situation in which Hamas's ability to control Gaza is weakened by the day by the acts that Israel is currently implementing there.
Now, you're taking polls. You have people who are data collectors that you employ to go into Gaza, go into the West Bank, to understand what's happening as well in Israel. Who are these people? How do you weed them out? And I'm sure it's very difficult at this time.
We have been collecting data in Gaza and in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem for the last 31 years. And so many of the people that we have been trained at least four times a year. All of our teams are trained four times a year. And many of them have stayed with us all these years. And so we think that we have the best data collection team that we can have, and that they are very well trained, and that we, based on that experience, based on the tests that we do, based on the control, the quality control that we exercise, that the team is the best that there can be.
Well, Dr. Shikaki, we had a journalist, you know, that has done work for us in Gaza over the years, and he did speak to people who were saying that Hamas was taking the goods. You know, we had video of this happening. So is it possible that this does still happen? That even if your people are getting a general consensus, that there are people that are afraid to speak out, whether it's a minority or not, it is happening.
We expect that people are more willing to talk now than before because of the anarchy prevailing. Hamas's ability to control or punish people today is much more limited than it was at any time before. So the grip of Hamas over Gaza has softened considerably, and we would expect that people are much less afraid to express their views today. The fact that there are, of course, incidents in which Hamas people do take aid is, of course, probably not in dispute, because we also hear that, and when we ask people, some people do say that. But this is not a majority. It's not even a significant minority. The majority of Palestinians do not point out that this is a Hamas action, but rather that this is the result of the environment that Israel has created, leading to this anarchy, and in which the ability of those who distribute the food and aid is extremely constrained. They can do very little against armed men, gangs, sometimes from big families who need the food, and sometimes merchants who want to sell the food, that is the aid, at higher prices in the market. And for them, having the ability to organize themselves into armed groups and take control of the goods is an indication that there is really no one in control in Gaza today. And day by day, this is the prevailing perception in Gaza, that Hamas's control is weakening. And along with that comes the kind of environment in which the aid distribution is suffering considerably.
Dr. Shikaki, by way of background, you were born in a refugee camp in Rafah. You attended the American University of Beirut and completed a doctorate at Columbia University. You also co-founded the Crown Center at Brandeis. You co-published a textbook with an Israeli, Arabs and Israelis, Conflict and Peacemaking in the Middle East, from the Israeli-Palestinian and Israeli-Palestinian-Arab-Palestinian perspectives. How different would that book look today?
That book was essentially an attempt to understand the dynamics of Israeli-Palestinian conflicts and the Arab-Israeli conflict at large. We have a third author with us, who's an Egyptian, who covered the Arab side of the story of that conflict. Our job in the book was to trace the developments, to determine why this conflict is so resilient, why it has been very difficult to resolve it over the years, and why we did occasionally manage to come very close to reaching a peace agreement, why this has been more successful with state-to-state relations such as Egypt or Jordan and Israel, or the Abrahamic Accords, but remained extremely difficult to do the same with the bilateral Israeli-Palestinian relations. So the book outlined those factors that have contributed to the resilience of the conflict, while at the same time pointing out those opportunities that have in the past presented themselves for the parties to try and reach accommodation at both dimensions, Arab-Israeli and Palestinian-Israeli. So the conflict today that basically continues this story of resilience for more than 120 years of conflict, although one can say that a lot of progress was made over the last 30 years, most importantly in removing the existential nature of the conflict from the prevailing perception of Palestinians and Israelis. This last war is probably one of the most significant developments since the start of the current what is called the peace process, the Oslo process. Since the start of that process, the current events are probably the single most important in restoring that sense of vulnerability for both sides, Israeli Jews and Palestinians, that the conflict is becoming more and more existential. The fear of Gazans and West Bankers that what Israel is after is a genocide and expulsion and ethnic cleansing, and the feeling of Israeli Jews that what happened on October the 7th indicates that the Palestinians do have genocidal aspirations against them. These developments certainly are new, and they take us back to those days 50 and 60 and 70 years ago, when the prevailing perception of the parties was that this conflict was irresolvable and that it is about existence, mere existence, and that the other side wants nothing but to completely destroy one side or the other.
Your brother Fatih was the co-founder of Islamic Jihad and ultimately was assassinated. You took a very different path. How do you reconcile the mindset of the terrorist with your intellectual approach to the conflict?
Well, people are different. People take different views. I'm sure you're different from your sister or your brother. And so that's true in life. People are different. They have different experiences.
Dr. Shakaki, I have a question for you as well. There have been numerous attacks by terrorist groups in the West Bank. The Israeli and Palestinian security organizations have worked together to fight them. But it seems now that the situation is kind of out of control. Is there any poll that you've done on Palestinians who are promoting terror versus peace?
The surveys that we've conducted show that the overwhelming majority of the Palestinians in the West Bank do support the formation of these armed groups. For most Palestinians, these armed groups represent the rejection of the status quo, the rejection of the status quo in terms of continued occupation and the demise of the two-state solution, and the desire of the Palestinians to take matters into their own hands to try and change this situation. They feel, the Israelis feel comfortable with the status quo. They have little to gain from ending their occupation, and that they feel that they have little to lose if they continue with that occupation today. And the Palestinians suffer every day. And so the status quo is unacceptable to them. And for most Palestinians, the Palestinian Authority's efforts through diplomacy, security coordination, and so on with Israel to produce a different Israeli policy, whether it is about settlements or ending the Israeli occupation through negotiations or resumption of negotiations, have failed. And for the therefore, the search has eventually led a majority of the Palestinians. This is particularly true since the formation of the current Israeli government. And so by early 2023, we begin to see a majority of West Bankers supporting armed resistance and supporting the formation of these armed groups throughout the West Bank.
Dr. Shakaki, do you feel that this particular divide, this is a very, very important point and moment in terms of what's happening with these terror groups, whether they're large or small, infiltrating Israel, do you feel that this moment, this is going to be the leading factor that's going to really outlive what's happened on October 7th? Because there seems to be very little control right now of the situation.
There's no doubt that the West Bank is currently boiling, but there are no indications that we are about to enter a phase where we see the West Bank exploding. This is not the case today. We do see extreme conditions in terms of the rejection of the Palestinian Authority, greater support for armed struggle and for the armed groups, a great deal of frustration among the public, anger at the restrictions imposed by the Israeli army since October the 7th. Economic conditions have worsened considerably. The unemployment rate, particularly among young people, has skyrocketed in the West Bank. For all these conditions, of course, not to speak of what the Israeli government is doing with settlements and home demolition and land confiscation and so on, this creates this process of boiling that we currently see. For an explosion to take place, however, that requires a change at the level of the leadership of the Palestinian Authority, that is Abbas, and it requires significant weakening of the Palestinian security services. And both conditions are not happening. It also requires that a very strong organization, in this case it would be Fatah or Hamas, would be willing and capable of organizing such an explosion, that is the Third Intifada. That is not, at the moment, something that one can see happening in the West Bank yet. And so the boiling process is probably going to generate new dynamics that could eventually lead to that. But conditions on the ground today do not point to such an explosion taking place anytime imminently.
Dr. Shikaki, you have polled the Palestinian people on who should lead Mahmoud Abbas when he hands over his reins. Many are talking about Marwan Barghouti. The question is, how does he pull out these days?
Today, Marwan Barghouti is more popular than he has been at any time since we started polling about him. October the 7th has generated much more support for him than any other Palestinian leader. And he is today the most popular leader. He was before October the 7th also the most popular leader. If elections are held today, there's absolutely no doubt that Barghouti can win these elections. And that is something that probably will continue to be because of the prevailing perception among the Palestinians that Barghouti is someone that they can trust, not only because they see him as incorruptible, but also because they think he's a unifier and because they think he will be able to fight for Palestinian national rights in ways that the current Palestinian leadership is not doing.
Dr. Shakaki, connected to this, is there any leader that you see aside from Barghouti that has potential to govern both in the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip?
Of course, there could be other leaders. Right now, the surveys that we conduct do not point to any particular leader who would be acceptable to the Palestinians, to a majority of Palestinians in the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip, unless there is elections. Obviously, if somebody wins in these elections, even if they are not popular today, they will be seen as legitimate. In the eyes of the Palestinians, electoral legitimacy is supreme. It is the most important source of legitimacy. And if there is elections and someone emerges as a winner in these elections, that person will certainly be trusted and be seen as someone who should or could control both the West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
The day after is hopefully coming soon. Do you have any kind of hopes for a resolve? What is on the horizon? And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask the pollster if he has a poll in the wings.
One has to remain optimistic despite the current very, very grim situation. We do see signs, even at this time, in which both Palestinians and Israeli Jews dehumanize each other. No, there is absolutely, this is probably one of the worst points in the history of the two peoples in terms of this level of dehumanization and lack of trust that we see today. Nonetheless, I think when people are confronted with a situation similar to the one that is currently prevailing, we're now waiting to see what will happen with the ceasefire negotiations versus what will happen with Iran and the retaliation from both Iran and Hezbollah. So the concern about a regional war versus the concern the prospect of making peace is leading both sides, both the Israeli Jews and Palestinians, coming to the conclusion that if the choice is theirs, if it is up to them, would they risk regional war, or would they be willing to agree to a regional and bilateral peace based on which a two-state solution is created and Arab-Israeli normalization takes place? In a choice between these two, majority of Israeli Jews and a majority of Palestinians favor a peace agreement, both bilateral and regional, much more than they favor a regional war. So that basically tells us that certainly when one looks at this situation and think how bad it could get, and that there is a choice that could take us away from all of that, and that is by reaching a comprehensive peace agreement, bilateral and regional, that people do not hesitate to favor a peace agreement. That, I think, is a very optimistic environment for one if someone, it requires obviously leadership that unfortunately don't see today, but it, in the region, but hopefully someone else, perhaps the US government, or after the election, someone could begin to seriously consider a much greater US role in bringing about this bilateral and regional peace. And that's the kind of surveys that we are currently hoping to release very soon. This is a joint Israeli-Palestinian survey.
Well, Dr. Khalil Shakaki, thank you so much for your time. The man with the polls, founder of the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research. Thank you also, Georgia Valente, for joining us today at the Media Line.
Thank you.